Odyssey celebrates Father's Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday brings you a new story. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
Now back to Damon and Ratto on 95.7 The Game.
It is our 5 o'clock hour here. Oh, what a weekend the NFL served up. To talk about all of it and how it ends tonight with the winner of Dallas and Tampa Bay arriving at Levi Stadium next Sunday, we go out to the Bud Light guest line to find Peter King, who will also be arriving next Sunday at Levi Stadium. Peter, we were just told that you're going to be out here for the game next week, so I'm looking forward to seeing you.
Yeah, you know, over the years, what I've found out is that very often the last game of the weekend is the one that is really heavily on people's minds when they wake up Monday morning. And what I found this week, because I wrote a little something on the last four of the games of the weekend. And what I find is that you wake up Monday morning and you're asking a lot of questions and talking a lot about that last game. And, like, I got Joe Burrow last night to talk about what it was, what it was going to be like to go to Buffalo and to have that Cincinnati-Buffalo game, which, I mean, a lot of people in Cincinnati are very upset that the game is in Buffalo versus, you know, having a coin flip forward or whatever the precedent the league set. But this will be a fun weekend. And I think the games this weekend, whoever goes to San Francisco, whether it's Tom Brady going to San Francisco, amazing. He went so long in his career without playing 49ers out there. And now he could play him twice in 6 weeks in California. So we'll see what happens tonight. But I think whoever the 49ers welcome in next week, that's going to be a really fun game late Sunday.
Well, and let's face it, if the NFL has its druthers, they'd love to see 49ers and Cowboys, because nobody brings more eyeballs to the party than the Dallas Cowboys. Plus the history just between the two teams in the postseason. And look, when it comes to the 49ers, Peter, you know, this is rightfully so. It was cast as a story about defense with an offense that was kind of coming along for the ride. And that's the way the entire year played itself out. All of a sudden now, here with Brock Purdy, there is a level of offense that is happening with a level of routine as far as it popping up to where it's like, if you liked the 49ers 2-3 weeks ago, you got to like them even more this week, because they just rolled up 500 yards to go along with a defense that, once it started forcing turnovers, that entire game changed on a dime.
It was such an interesting game, I thought, because at halftime, I was convinced that this was going to be a great four-quarter game. And then I think what really changed everything, and I was glad to see, I was glad to see a lot of credit for a guy who doesn't get much of any credit, I'm sure, because of all the star power inside the 49ers. Charles, I'm going to mispronounce his last name, O'Menahue.
You nailed it.
But, you know, he was one of my players of the week this week, because that was the key play in this football game. You know, when he forced that turnover, Geno Smith, I think that changed everything about this game. So to me, I'm kind of fascinated by the depth also of the 49ers right now, because that is one of those things that has really shown up, and shown up in a big way as this year has gone on.
Kyle Shanahan has always, since you talked about depth, Kyle Shanahan has always shown, when he constructs a roster, a huge bias toward running backs and toward defensive linemen. When you see what they've done this year, and maybe last year to a certain extent, is this a trend that you think is going to become league-wide, or is he just better at doing the thing that all other general managers like to do?
Well, I think the 49ers have had some rotten luck when it comes to running backs. I mean, you go back to Jerick McKinnon, he was a big free agent acquisition, whatever year it was, 18 or 19, and they just could not keep him on the field. And it's sad, honestly, when you look at what could have been, because now you look at McKinnon in Andy Reid's offense, and he's the golden child. You know, and imagine had he stayed healthy, what could have happened, in San Francisco with him. But I'm sort of convinced that Kyle Shanahan has understood the need for depth at positions that get hurt a lot. Running backs, it's hard to keep them on the field all the time, and it's certainly hard to keep defensive linemen with big bodies flying all around. It's hard to keep them healthy. So I just think it's a calculated risk that Shanahan and Lynch have taken, and I think it's paying off this year.
Well, look at the calculated risk they took to bring in Christian McCaffrey and what he has done. I mean, I know it's late in the season to install or take someone who's only played half a season with someone and say they truly deserve MVP consideration. But Christian McCaffrey, he truly deserves MVP consideration. How would you like to assign, what would you like to assign to the word value? Because I don't know if anyone's value has changed a team's prospects as much as Christian McCaffrey has. And after I don't know if Kyle was playing the day or the game or Pete backwards by giving him something to look at before he let him touch it. But McCaffrey does not touch the ball on the 49ers opening drive and they settle for a field goal. His first touch is just emblematic of what he has done to this team. His first touch is 68 yards around the left side, blocking everywhere, was hat on a hat. And after two possessions and McCaffrey getting involved in the second possession, it's 10-0 49ers just like that. I mean, he truly is one of, if he is healthy, the great players in this league.
And, my only question when the 49ers acquired him and paid a pretty big price for him, my only question was, I think when he's healthy, he will be a great addition to this team, and he will be a great person to really help this team have a piece that it had not had. And so I think what is really interesting about McCaffrey is his physicality and his ability to outrun people to the outside, but also get an extra 2 or 3 yards in the middle. The one play that didn't get talked about enough because it was only a 9-yard gain, but it so perfectly encapsulates how important he is to this team. Remember the run that he had where he sort of breaks around left end and there's nothing there, and he waits and waits and waits, and a lot of backs would have just said, okay, look, I'm going to burrow, into a linebacker here and try to get a yard and a half or 2 yards. And he said, no, I'm not doing that. I've got good enough instincts, and I'm tough enough, and I'm strong enough that I am going to cut back all the way across the field. I'm going to get a block from George Kittle, and I'm going to try to make something big of this. Now, he didn't make anything big of it, but 9 yards is better than a 0-yard gain. And that is who he is. I talked to Kittle after the game, and we talked about that exact run. And he said, one of the things he said that was interesting, I think, is that he said early on, that was not the kind of play that McCaffrey was making. But now He really knows our offense. He's got incredible confidence in what he can do in this offense. And that was a perfect example. Like, after I heard Kittle talk, I said to myself, okay, that first game or two when he played in November, maybe he just burrows his head and tries to get a yard. But now he's very familiar with the scheme. He's very familiar with who's going to be blocking who. And he goes back and he ends up getting 9 yards out of it. And I don't know. I thought that was a real significant play just for McCaffrey's meaning to this team.
Speaking of the 49er offense in general, which of these two teams, Dallas or Tampa, is going to give the 49er offense more trouble under normal circumstances?
I think Dallas, because I think Dallas, I mean, first of all, Dallas has the singular player who can wreck a game on defense in Micah Parsons. I don't think Tampa Bay has a Micah Parsons. They don't have a Micah Parsons. But the one thing that Tampa Bay does have is Tampa Bay has an excellent secondary that's getting healthy at the right time. If they win this game and come out of this game healthy, in my opinion, I think Tampa would really be a challenge for Brock Purdy and for Kyle Shanahan to solve.
Peter King joining us here on the Bud Light guest line. Bud Light, easy to drink, easy to enjoy. And I'll tell you, the Brock Purdy experience has been a lot easier to enjoy than anyone could have possibly imagined. Kyle Shanahan, hell, let's face it, Brock Purdy's parents couldn't have imagined he would fit so well as we've seen it. I mean, he adds on Mississippi's to plays with his scrambling ability that is, you know, either going to create the catch part three. I mean, if Brandon Ayuk held on to that ball in the back of the end zone, this kid's got his signature career highlight that already.
Can I just make one comment about that play?
Sure.
To me, okay, that play goes down as an incompletion. That really symbolizes everything about Brock Purdy that you love, okay? And I'll tell you, because there's three things involved in that play that when I saw it, I immediately I clicked back, okay, and I got my little iPhone out with the stopwatch on it, and I timed it, and it was, I wrote about it.
12 seconds.
It was, you know, I had it like at 11.6 or 11 point something. But anyway, here's what is significant about that. Imagine the confidence that Brock Purdy has to have in himself, okay, to be able to make that play. And I think one of the things that I loved about it is that it looked like he looked at all four receivers multiple times on that play. And then he finally threw a bullet, a perfect throw, in the corner of the end zone to Brandon Ayuk. It was a tough catch, but, you know, I thought I should have caught it. But be that as it may, everything about that play just said great things about who Brock Purdy is and how he plays.
And
the one other thing I just wanted to add, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but the one other thing I wanted to add is that after the game, I talked to George Kittle, and we talked about that play. We talked about a bunch of plays, but one of the things that I pointed out to him and that he commented on eloquently was about how Brock Purdy is good in large part, and we have talked about this, because of the 48 starts he had in a Power 5 conference, you know, at Iowa State. And as Kittle told me, he goes, you know what, a lot about being great in the NFL, particularly at quarterback, is failure and handling failure. And this guy, in the first half of that game the other day against Seattle, had some tough moments. And, you know, but you know, as Kittle said, you know, he's got to be thinking, I've been through this before. I've been through stuff exactly like this before. And so that's why he was sure that Brock Purdy was going to come out in the second half and be you know, who Brock Purdy has shown himself to be, you know, in his first six games. So I thought that was a good point by Kittle, that a lot, especially about quarterbacking, is about learning to handle failure and about, after having that failure, knowing that you can come back and have success.
Talking about failure, and I want to go macro here, which coach should feel the most like a failure today? John Harbaugh, Kevin O'Connell, or Mike McDaniel?
How come you didn't give me Brandon Staley as an option?
Because I think he's cursed. I think he joined a franchise that is like the Chicago Cubs, that can never win no matter what.
Except they did.
But if you want to throw in Staley, go ahead. Throw him in too.
I think, you know, first of all, I'll say one sentence about my three runners up, and then I'll give you the guy who should feel bad. Look, John Harbaugh was trying to win a game with both hands tied behind his back, and it's going to be very, very hard, even in a rivalry game like that, to win a game with Tyler Huntley. Okay, so that would be one. Kevin O'Connell, look, they could not block the Giants' front. It's hard for Kevin O'Connell to take the blame for that. Yeah, they had a tough time, especially with Dexter Lawrence. And look, as far as Staley goes, I just don't think he had enough defensive pieces to stop an offense that started to play well. The guy I've got a real problem with coming out of yesterday is Mike McDaniel. A big, big problem. Can you please tell me why a guy who looked like he was in pretty good shape during the course of the year when he did play, Skylar Thompson, how come they could not get plays off? How come they were consistently late, on the play clock? That last drive was one of the most maddening drives I've ever seen in my life, for a very simple reason. You know, that quarterback was not prepared to play well in that game. And that goes, and look, you say, how in the world did they keep that game close, against Buffalo? And I think the biggest reason is they were able to get three turnovers, and it was not a particularly sharp day for the Buffalo Bills. But I would blame McDaniel more than anybody else for his team's preparedness coming into that game.
It certainly took a long time to get that fourth down play in.
Ridiculous.
I mean, I couldn't believe it. Could not believe it. When you look around I just think that Joe Burrow and company were in position to lose a game to Baltimore because they weren't any, ball of fire offensively.
Right.
You talked about the problems that Buffalo's having offensively. It's hard to say that Kansas City's having offensive problems, but they're certainly not averaging 37 points per game over their last six games. But Brock Purdy and the Niners are. They've been billed appropriately so as the best defense in the league all year long. What happens if the 49ers have the best offense in this league now too?
They're going to win the Super Bowl. Let's see what I'm really, really curious to see what Philadelphia does Saturday night. And I say that,
don't you think they could lose that game? I do. I think the Giants are rolling in hot, and Philly's a little again. Maybe
the Giants really remind me of the Giants. And again, I don't mean that they're going to win the Super Bowl, but the Giants remind me of those two teams that got hot that were not the best teams in football in 2007 and 2011 when they went on to beat the Patriots both times in the Super Bowl. That is what this reminds me of. They entered the playoffs as good teams, twice as they had a good team. but they no one thought they had a great team. And it's the same thing now. Their first playoff game, you saw Daniel Jones looking like a top-flight NFL quarterback. No one until the last month or so has ever thought that Daniel Jones was going to be a top-flight NFL quarterback. And now he looks like it. And it's a tribute to the guy I voted Coach of the Year over Kyle Shanahan, Brian Daboll. You know, in my opinion, he took an awful, awful team and, you know, has done a lot with it. So I think the Giants have got a shot on Saturday night, no question.
Okay, you brought up coaches, so I'll just ask out and out. Are you surprised that Jim Harbaugh passed on the NFL this time?
A little bit, but I don't, I mean, I don't know him well, and so I don't know what all went into that. You know what I mean? I don't know what went into that, to his decision, whether it was all money, whether his agent told him, look, you're not getting this job. I don't know the answer to that, but I thought he was going to end up with one of these NFL jobs, so I am surprised a little bit.
Peter King on Damon and Ratto, and I saw that D'Amico Ryans has 4 interviews set up this week. I'm guessing these are virtual or Zoom meetings. Yeah. They better be. But Texans, Colts, Broncos, Cardinals, does it feel abstract that he would sign up for all 4? Or, you know, it feels like it's pretty common to say, hey, while we're coaching postseason games, we're going to postpone interviews. Or D'Amico's not in that in that position to operate from yet.
The unfortunate thing is the NFL should have fixed this problem and chose not to. Because all of the teams who have lost basically leaned on the NFL and said, you know, we want to be able to take care of our business before the middle of February. We want to get our coach hired so that we can start on preparation for next year. And look, I understand why they do that, but it is absolutely, totally, unequivocally unfair to the teams that employ them. And look, here's the only reason why, in my opinion, like, I just don't like this. It's because now, you know, no matter what you say, D'Amico Ryans is going to have his attention in 2 different places, probably 5 different places this week, okay? I just don't like it. It's not fair to the 49ers. And D'Amico Ryans is a great guy. He's an excellent coach. He deserves to be a head coach in the NFL. But all of this stuff should be handled on February 15th, you know, not on January, whatever today is, 16th. It's wrong. And the NFL, look, I will hate to see if that defense doesn't play well in the playoff game this weekend, because in my opinion, it would be a natural thing to ask, did all this time D'Amico Ryans use to prepare for these interviews have anything? Everybody's going to say no. It had nothing to do with it. It's human nature. It just is. It's wrong. It's not D'Amico Ryan's fault. Unfortunately, he's just playing the game the way the NFL stupidly has set it up.
Stupidity aside, is there a job out there that's a perfect fit for him, or is this more sort of an exercise in learning more about what owners and general managers want in interviews, and that he should be thinking more about next year than this?
I mean, it's hard to tell. I mean, so the other day, Raheem Morris had a 4-hour Zoom meeting with the Indianapolis Colts, and I heard that Raheem Morris blew him away, and that they really like him. I have no idea if he's going to get the job. I don't know who's going to get any of these jobs. I don't cover this the way I used to. But what usually happens is that it becomes a match. And the two sides really end up getting along well. and they say, boy, I could really work with this guy. And so that's what it comes down to. Will it happen with D'Amico Ryans? I don't know. Nobody knows. But he certainly is worth somebody giving him a job. He's ready. I think that the one thing I would really want to know if I were him and if I were the team, I would really want to know who's going to do the offensive staff, who's going to be my offensive staff, who's going to be the quarterback guru, and who's going to be my quarterback. I wouldn't worry about the defense. He'll figure that out. Same way Robert Saleh figured out the defense with the Jets. If Robert Saleh doesn't make it with the Jets, it'll be because of the offense. So therefore, that's what I'd be most concerned with right now if I were D'Amico Ryans.
Final question for you, Peter, since we're talking about time, hours committed to prepare, so on and so forth. I saw it brought up by Dove Kleiman this weekend. He tweeted, you know, it didn't seem entirely fair that the winners of Cowboys-Bucks will go against the 49ers, who played early on Saturday and gained basically two extra days of rest with more time to prepare. It's a competitive disadvantage. This is the playoffs, not the regular season. Do you think there is an inherent competitive disadvantage to whoever comes in to the 49ers on Sunday?
Look, the 49ers had a disadvantage because they had a short week to prepare for the Seahawks. And so now the 49ers get the extra day, all right? And look, the Bucks and the Cowboys had an extra day to prepare for this game.
Right.
And the fact that it's a night game, it's almost an extra day and a third of rest and of getting off your feet and getting ready for a game. So I think that's a ridiculous point to make. Once the NFL said, we're going to play a Monday night football game in the playoffs, once they said that, then you have to understand that there's a chance that on one end, you're going to get a benefit, and on the other end, you're going to get jobbed a little bit. So I have no sympathy whatsoever. The 49ers had a short week the first time and now have a longer week, and they can't control who wins or loses the games. If the Vikings won yesterday, they'd be playing a team with absolutely normal rest for a game. That's the way life goes. I'm not into that.
There you go.
Whatever, you know.
That's the way the cookie crumbles, according to Peter King. And I'm looking forward to seeing you on Sunday, Peter. Thank you very much for joining us. And we're either going to have 49ers Cowboys or 49ers versus Tom Brady. Either way, it's good for business around here. Thank you so very much.
Sounds great, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very, very much to Peter King. Ray, why don't you get a press credential? Come on down to Levi's Stadium with me on Sunday. We'll sit on either side of Peter and just bombard him with questions during the entire game. We'll just annoy the hell out of Peter King. It'll be like stereo.
I don't want to be an accessory to his ultimate death when he pulls his head off at halftime. So you go ahead and hammer him.
Look at you, mercy.
But the... Yeah, you raised kind of a weirdly interesting point. Not about whether Dallas or Tampa has one less day to prepare, but that as long as this format, this playoff format, is going to be used, there's an excellent likelihood that a team like Dallas, who is a ratings getter every year, is going to get stuck on the Monday night game, and that due to their popularity, they're going to pay a price if they get to the second round, like almost on a yearly basis. And because the NFL's not going to bother with any of that, if I'm Jerry Jones, I'm going to raise at least a bit of a stink. Not about we didn't have enough time to play the 49ers, but we're going to have not enough time for every divisional playoff game we ever get in because we're always going to be the Monday night game. And I just wonder how the league will put up with Jerry Jones, who essentially runs the league, pissing and moaning about what he will view as a competitive disadvantage, whether it is one or not.
I don't even know if it would bother Jerry as long as he knew that his team was getting the marquee treatment. You know, he's that much of a put the Dallas Cowboys first, where if it meant they arrived to the table of strategy second, as long as they were sitting at the head of the table for the marquee time slot or spot or viewing slot, I think he'd almost be cool with it. But you bring up a very interesting point. And to me, what the NFL needs to do two things just in terms of playoff fairness and scheduling. You don't get to choose which game, which team would do better in what television time slot. You assign the seeds to their to whatever games you're going to be playing are decided by the seeds. So the, you know, at the Monday night game is between the this seed and the that seed. Not, oh, it's a more marquee night, so let's put the Cowboys in it because they're the bigger name. You know, if you are the two seed, you don't play first thing on a Saturday morning because the lower seed that could be coming to you shouldn't be coming all the way from Monday night. You know, you can figure it out that way. And then in terms of the D'Amico Ryans conundrum and four interviews this week, and I mean, imagine if he has four-hour-long Zoom meetings. That's an entire workday that he's not working on getting the 49ers ready to beat their next opponent. So it's unfair to the 49ers for sure. The NFL should just have a full-on moratorium on hiring, firings, and any and all. Like, you don't even get to create the vacancy until January 12th. Like, the first Monday after the completion of the regular season shouldn't be known as Black Monday. That should be the Monday after the Super Bowl.
Well, theoretically, you're right, but owners don't trust each other. So they're always going to try to, I want to get my guy out of here and get my new guy in here as quickly as possible so you don't have a chance to outbid me for him.
Well, I don't think there's
The second thing I would say is that D'Amico Ryans is probably not going to get a job this time around for one simple reason. If he's doing four interviews this week, none of them can be very comprehensive because he doesn't have the time for that. You know, they're not all going to be four-hour Zoom meetings.
He also doesn't have the right time to prepare
for a future employer, let alone four. So what I think is going to happen is that he's going to be the guy in the hopper for the next round. You know, and there will be people who interview him after the 49ers season is over. Maybe not for a job in this cycle, but for a job next cycle. And that's the thing I would like to see. So somebody like D'Amico Ryans can say, you know what? I'm hot right now, but I've got this job. If I do this job well, nobody's going to sour on me next year. So why don't I wait till this season's over, do the vacation with the family, come back, and then have long, extensive interviews with whoever wants to interview me. And put in that time then.
I don't think there's a single hiring that happens in the NFL all above the table. There's always back channel communications in the, you know, least and you know, with absolutely nothing nefarious going on. That's just how business gets done. You know, grease is applied to the skids somewhere else. So what everyone sees looks nice and smooth, but there's always operations happening somewhere else.
Everything's weaseling.
Exactly. I believe that anyways. So there's no way to prevent the weaseling that's going on right now from not happening. But you put the moratorium on any and all hiring freezes for the following reasons. It's the most fair to the teams that are still alive. And the NFL should be worried about finishing seasons the right way more than it is about getting other team seasons started the right way before you've even reached your offseason. Also, if all NFL coaching hires and fires happened in mid-January to February, congratulations, football. You now officially, absolutely 100% own 12 months of the calendar. Like, it not only helps the product on the field, but it helps you guys in the headlines off the field 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Nobody's going with a spring training report ahead of, you know, the Denver Broncos hired their head coach today.
I don't think they worry about that anymore. I think they figure we've already got that taken care of. I think they say, when we have news, we'll announce it, even if it's at 2 in the morning, we'll get what we need. So I don't even think that's a concern anymore. What I think is, and I'll just use David Tepper as an example. He's got Steve Wilks, but he wants somebody better. So he's going to fire Steve Wilks the minute he gets a chance to do it, because he wants to be first in line for Sean Payton or Jim Harbaugh or name the big name coach. Because there is no honor among billionaires or thieves. It just, I want my coach now, and you're not going to tell me that I can't have it, because I am your boss, not the other way around. And there isn't much that the league office can do about that.
When we come on back, we have one segment left. Robin in San Francisco absolutely wants her own show here on 95.7 The Game. Robin, if you stay through the commercial break, we're going to give you your own segment, basically. We're going to come on back, and we're going to talk to you to end today's show before we sort of recap what happened to the Warriors today as well, and we'll let you know what's going on in this wild card game. Don't you go anywhere this afternoon. Damon and Ratto, one segment left today. We're going to spend an awful lot of it with one of our favorite callers, Robin, coming up next here, so don't you move a muscle. We are brought to you by, the merch store? Hell yeah. It's open right now. The Relevant shirt, more relevant now than it was on Friday, for goodness sake. Check it all out at 957thegameshop.com.
Odyssey celebrates Father's Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
Now back to Damon and Ratto on 95.7 The Game.
So, you know, any good sports talk radio show is going to start with two wildly prepared and interesting hosts. Check, check. Handsome hosts.
Where is this show?
Check, check. Talented hosts. Check, check. Look at us checking off all the boxes, Ray.
Look at us lying to the audience.
Then you need a good guest. Peter King, we certainly had one. Michael Irvin is either going to join us tomorrow sometime or on Wednesday, because he might be flying back. But listening to Michael Irvin on a week where it's either going to be 49ers and Cowboys or 49ers and not Cowboys is going to give us a very interesting Michael Irvin. So we're looking forward to talking to him. So you need great hosts, check. Great guests, check. On the way. And you need great callers. This brings us to Robin in San Francisco. How are you, Robin? First time talking to you, I believe, here in the new year. So it's good to start with you. What's going on?
Nothing too much. Hey, Ray, this is what I want to say to you. Damon's act is correct, and you should accept the compliment sometimes. You know, when I was younger, I was always told how pretty I was. I used to hate that. And a very old wise man who is now deceased, my father, told me to learn to accept a compliment and say thank you, because looks are everything when you don't have them. So is sex, so is money, so is education, okay? So I'm just having a little fun with you. How many seconds I got, Damon? Here's what I want to say to you guys. It's not my perspective, but the other night, someone shared that Brock Purdy is similar to Jeremy Lin, and that we're all caught up. He compared it to insanity. And that Brock Purdy is a nice little story, but he's nothing more than Jeremy Lin. And this whole notion that when he hears our local sports people talk about him being our fan base, him being the future for the Niners, is a joke, because he's nothing more than Jeremy Lin, and that he is a product of the system in which I responded, because I never called into the show, but I did, in which I responded that who the hell cares if he's a product of the system, because the system is great. We're not looking at and not measuring what is going to be next year. We're measuring the results right now. But I wanted to, and he said to me that Brock Purdy was nothing more than a poor man's Jimmy Garoppolo. So while I think that he has a valid point in that many of our people in our fan base is caught up, I think in the Lin Sanity analogy, I don't think that...
Let me just step in here. Because I hadn't heard anybody make that comparison until you just brought it up, Robin. Jeremy Lin was a hell of a story. But it was a story that blipped on a team that didn't matter. So there was really no substance to any of it, other than sometimes a guy catches a heater for a month in the NBA. And it probably happens on a bad team that doesn't have any options to put in over him. So that's, I mean, Jeremy Lin was a great story. But it was extinguished quickly before it was ever even truly tested. Now, who knows how long the Brock Purdy story goes, but he has now passed and taken a bigger test than anything that Jeremy Lin took when he was having his regular season, hey, that was impressive, 3-week run with the New York Knicks. I mean, there is a much more significant thing and entity, I believe, in Brock Purdy than in Jeremy Lin, because everyone looked at Jeremy Lin and said, well, this is eventually going to come to an end. How long can he keep it going? God bless him. No one really sees where this ends for Brock Purdy yet, because football has a really odd way of taking someone who may not have the physical measurables, but they can do it enough to where there's something here. Jeremy Lin had a high basketball IQ, but he had none of the physical measurables that make you a serious consideration for NBA prominence. It's just that simple.
In fairness, though, Brock Purdy could never have fixed the New York Knicks.
There's no way Brock Purdy gets the Knicks to the playoffs.
No. In fact, there's no way anybody ever gets the Knicks to the playoffs. That's the beauty of the Knicks. Hey, they are impervious to talent.
They could go this year.
They could, but I have faith.
They can still figure it out.
Oh, yeah.
Anyways, Robin, thank you very much for the call. We love you. You need to not... Don't look at it this way. Don't worry what anyone's saying on any other show. You worry about this show. This show is going to give you the talking points that you need to take to other shows while you call them.
Yeah, I mean, Brock Purdy is RJ Barrett.
And you need to learn how to take a compliment, sweetie.
That's not happening.
Why not?
It's in my DNA.
Okay. All right.
I mean, Robin was right. She's a lovely woman. I don't think there's any argument there, but I'll take care of me. Thanks, Mom.
Be nice just to see you appreciate how much people actually appreciate. I mean, no one here, but, you know, some people in the audience do.
Trust me. I'm with me every day. I know me better than anybody else.
Who has a longer day than you, having to spend all day with you?
Oh, it just, the levels of crippling despair would fell an ox.
Can we quickly talk a little bit about this road trip that the Warriors have found a little success on here? Because, look, they blow out the Spurs in front of a tiny crowd in San Antonio. That was a hell of a gathering for a regular season basketball game. And I wouldn't be surprised to see every team try to rent out the local football team stadium when you have that opportunity, and try to do that once a year and have NFL teams trying to, or NBA teams all trying to one-up each other in the attendance category.
I could see that, although there are places where they used to play all their games there. And this was sort of a one-off because the Alamo Dome is where the Spurs used to play.
Right. And it's their 50th anniversary.
Yeah, so it was a thing. That said, 68,000 people wanting to go see the home team deliberately lose, that's a special thing.
And that's what sort of took the special out of that Warrior performance. They scored 144 points on the way to just mollywopping a Spurs team that isn't good and probably isn't even trying that hard. Then they give up 132 points in a loss to the Bulls, where they make Vucevic look like Shaq. He goes for 43 points, 14 rebounds, 4 assists, and 4 steals in a game that the Warriors, I mean, it's one of the weirdest, like, you look through it, look at some of the numbers, and look at some of the box scores. The Warriors hit 21 threes, they had 35 assists, and they out-rebounded Chicago. And lose.
Convincingly.
Because they had zero answer in the paint for Vucevic. Zero. No answer at all.
And no interest in playing consistent team defense, which is the thing that continues to make them inconsistent, confounding, and bizarre. I mean, they weren't playing great defense today for the longest stretch. I mean, Tim Roy, I thought he was going to just yank his own head off. But eventually, you know, Jordan Poole and Stephen Curry start making shots, and they don't stop making shots, and that's why they win the game.
Well, and another reason why they won, too, is Draymond had a fourth quarter where he brought that defense that wasn't there the first three.
Yeah, but it's still, as a team concept, they play defense only grudgingly, which is why I'm beginning to think that this is actually who they are. They're the team that's going to hover around 500 the whole year and end up eighth. Now, I don't know what happens in the last 10 games of the season or the playoffs, but I think this is it's now almost 50 games. This is the team you've got. And there isn't going to be any salvation at the trade deadline. You're going to have a team that is...
You know, 45, 46, 48 games.
Maybe. Not if they're going to continue to defend only when they feel like it. Because, frankly, Vucevic's side, the Bulls didn't have DeRozan. That's a game that they should control because they can defend, but they don't defend enough, consistently enough, to be trustworthy. And the one thing, more than anything else, the Warriors have always been is trustworthy.
Today, they did beat the Washington Wizards with a 34-25 fourth quarter where Draymond officially got nasty. Curry had 41 points and was 11 of 12 from the free throw line, so good to see him getting to the line. Klay, he sat on the back-to-backs. Jordan Poole got a start, which means you got a good Jordan Poole, and he dropped 32, hit a team-best 7 threes today. The Warriors get back to 500 with a win. They're 22-22 with a 5-17 road record. Anthony Lamb had a team best plus 36 today, but it took a team-wide 40-50-90 shooting split to beat a really bad Wizards team. They had to give their all to beat a bad Wizards team, and that's not a good sign. And the Warriors, they're going to be a playoff team. But they're not going to be a team of consequence this year. You can just feel it. It's written all over them, unless they do something magical once the postseason begins. Oh, by the way, every time Andre Iguodala dunks, apparently, he needs the next two games off. So he should probably stop doing that. Thank you so much for tuning in today. We'll be back on the air at 3 o'clock tomorrow. Grandy Lucas, thank you. Peter King, thank you. All of you, thank you. And I'm going to encourage you all to stay tuned right here, because coming up next, we're going to join this Cowboys-Buccaneers game live in progress. Right now, we got a 6-0 game. Dak Prescott had a 22-yard touchdown to Dalton Schultz, but the point after touchdown was missed, and the second quarter is just underway. Cowboys with the ball at their own 20, and I'll let the broadcast pick it up at the top of the hour from there. In the meantime, thank you very much for tuning in, and please do remember that sports don't build character, they reveal it.
And like that, gone.
Odyssey celebrates Father's Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast with Dan Hanses and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.